Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. I'm Andy.
And I'm Alistair George William Trombley Birchall. And joining us in the tank is father, writer, colleague.
Lover.
In Lover. That order. Lover.
Michael Ward.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on show 162.
Yes. Yeah, wanted to bring you in for the big 162.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for...
it's a real special occasion.
Yeah, so. No, it's good.
I know. Look, are you a numbers guy? You really care about like...
I like numbers, sure.
The importance of them? Like, you know? Yeah. Or like, would you see anything in 162?
Mm. Well, it's a prime number.
Is it an even prime number?
It's one of the rare even primes. They're particularly prized.
Mm. I've got to tell you an incredible number trivia fact that I found on Twitter this week.
This has already been sold incredibly highly.
It's amazing. Just let me get it right. I usually stuff these things up.
Yeah.
It's an anagram, right? 11 plus 2... is an anagram of 12 plus 1. Okay. 11 plus 2 is actually an anagram of 12 plus 1. Get your pens down, everybody. Write it down.
Wait,
scramble the letters.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Hang on. Well.
Well, because 1 ends in N-E and 11 starts with E-L. So already... Oh, anagram. Sorry, was thinking parallelogram.
No, not parallelogram.
Parallelogram?
Oh. Parallelanagram.
Phew.
Wait, a parallelogram like the shape?
What? Oh, palindrome. All right, I was thinking...
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Oh, my God. What is going on here?
Welcome to numbers and shapes.
Letters and shapes.
Yes. So that's pretty... Don't you think that's pretty cool?
Well, it broke my brain. Yeah. I think that's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they both add up to 13, but they're 11 plus 2 is an anagram of 12 plus 1.
That's amazing that mathematically and verbally, or, you know, what would you use that? Letterly?
English-literally.
English-literally, that they're mathematically equivalent.
And is it true that Michael Ward is an anagram of Wardle Mike?
Correct.
Yeah.
Leakham Draw is my name backwards, as I've known since last Tuesday.
Mm.
Yeah. You never thought about it until last Tuesday?
No, I'm joking. I've known it for quite some time. Yeah. At least a couple of weeks. Leakham Draw. Yeah. No, I really like, you know, word.
Oh, jumbling.
Jumbling and.
Yeah.
And word play and word trickery and all of that stuff.
Are you a crossword person?
Yeah.
When cryptic?
No. My wife does the cryptic. I do the quick.
Mm.
I sort of can do a cryptic, but I'm not very good at them.
Yeah, right.
He said cryptically.
Did he?
No, not really. Hang on, I'll say it again and see if it's cryptic. I do the quick. Is that cryptic?
That's even less cryptic, perhaps, than the previous one.
I do a puzzle of squares and letters on newsprint. What am I?
I'm still thinking that's not really particularly cryptic. It's just a sort of a description.
That's not cryptic once you know the answer.
It's a descriptic.
Yes.
This is like a regular crossword where they kind of do that. Mm. So, yeah, it was a... You essentially described a regular crossword.
Mm. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I think we should come up with an even quicker version of the quick crossword, where basically we just give you the answers, but we sort of phrase them as if they're a cryptic. So we say, my first letter is A, but followed by N.
N?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. The really quick.
Oh, okay. Quicker than that?
Well.
We just write the answers.
Mm.
And then you write.
The quickest one is a filled-in crossword.
It is. It's already filled in.
And you just look at it and nod and go, right, and it'll fits together.
Maybe you could write your name at the top. This is the space for you.
Sure.
Michael did this.
Yeah.
I feel like there's got to be one that gives you, that's quite quick, but still gives you that feeling of satisfaction. Mm. I guess you've already done that with that.
Mm.
Maybe one that just lies to you. It's not, the answer is not dog.
Right, and when they answer, you put in dog, and you're like, God damn it, it was dog.
There is a very quick crossword, like beneath the quick crossword is one where it's four squares or something, or eight squares, and it's just four words reading across and the same as down.
Mm.
So you need to know four letter words. That's
it. But I feel like even that's pitching a little bit higher, for the audience that we're targeting.
The dummies.
Yeah.
Hey, how you going?
Do you think that we could maybe we could offer them, and they're just like a sort of a transfer? You peel it off a piece of paper, right, and it's got all the answers written on it, and you just stick it down over the top. So you just peel it off one side and you stick it down over the top there, and so you still have the feeling of you've put the words in the squares, but just a little sticky thing, a little transparent, little transfer on there. Or maybe we could even have a book full of them.
Oh my God.
A book full of them. We give people a book full of them, right? And you keep it in your pocket of your jacket or whatever, and when you sit down to in front of a newspaper anywhere, you just look in there, and there's just a whole lot of different filled-in crosswords, and you just peel one out surreptitiously, and you stick it down on the page, and then you look around the room, going, "An easy one today," and you hold it up like that.
Sure,
and
it's
like, "Oh wow, he only just got here 30 seconds ago, and already he's filled out an entire crossword."
Well, I always thought that was a good way to impress a girl would be to do the crossword at home. Then you go to work on the train, and you see the girl that you have your eye on, and you just pull out the paper and just basically complete it in 30 seconds because you've already done it before. Mm. And she's thinking to herself, "Geez, this guy's pretty good.
I'd like to
do crosswords with him.
Strip him naked and."
But then it's kind of that scenario though when you do finally, you know, you do finally get her home, you know,
and
then she's like, why don't we do a crossword? You know, obviously that's the first thing on her mind. And then
she does seem like that type.
I was thinking more two across room where there's a bed.
She goes, I don't get it.
Bedroom.
Oh, that's not two across.
No, not enough letters.
Big D? Look, I really like the idea of a guy who tries to pick up.
Oh, yeah, I think that's great. Yeah, but then, like, but could you also do it with... did you ever have the spot the difference in your... We had one in the Mercury in Tasmania.
Yeah.
Trying to impress a girl with the spot the difference. I work it out at home. This
not
is
wearing
thing.
A hat.
Yes.
Choose a different colour.
So you're doing it out loud as well. to really not wearing a hat. Choose a different colour. Only three drops of rain on the pavement there.
This guy's good.
An easy one today.
I just thought about that guy who pre-does the thing and then does it quickly in front of the lady to impress her, and then so. I think that should result in a date. But then I think later on he could end up in a sort of life or death situation in which it requires him to be able to do a crossword quite quickly.
Mm. Mm.
And then she's like, oh, thank God. I've never picked a better partner for a desperate situation like this.
Mm.
She's got no doubt in her mind that he'll be able to.
And
save
I've been
her.
In a few desperate situations like this, and none of the partners I've picked for them have been nearly as appropriate as you for this one.
I've never seen that in a thriller film at the end where the, you know, the countdown clock on the nuclear weapon is counting down and the guy has to do a crossword like at the end of Mission Impossible or a Bond film or something.
It's always wires.
It's always wires. Cut the red or cut the blue instead of, you know, what's two across or what's six down.
I mean, like, the serial killers who have a gimmick and things like that, it doesn't often cross, to bombers, people who, you know, sort of are willing to, you know, sort of put up,
'cause there's indiscriminately so much, blow up a whole blow area. Blow up,
you know, yeah, things like that. And so, because I guess there's so much intricacy that goes into building a good bomb in the first place that often they don't feel like they need a gimmick. But to add to that, you know, be the crossword bomber, you know, to have a thing, the panel like that, you actually can't access the wires. It's no wires. It's wireless. It's a wireless bomb, you know, so it's the fuchsia. So there's nothing to cut.
Yep.
Like that, right?
Wireless bombs. That's good.
Yeah, so there's really nice.
Not even any wires inside or anything like
that.
Just
crossword. Just crossword.
And then bomb.
Bomb.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And so it's the crossword bomber.
Yeah.
And then she, I guess, realizes the error of her mistake of picking.
Surely there was a Batman villain to do with crosswords, like the crossword or the puzzler or something.
Well, there was the Puzzler King
or something like that. I'm sure
there was the Riddler.
Yeah, I'm saying besides him.
Well, I'm saying that as well as him, there was the Riddler.
And
I'm saying beside your one.
Yes,
your one that's beside my one. Yeah. I'm saying is my one
is the Riddler.
Yeah,
and Dr. Sudoku would have been a villain if Sudoku had existed back in, you know, the 60s.
Absolutely. Do you think he would have been from the Orient?
Why not?
Yeah.
Is
Sudoku's... Because it's got a name that makes it sound like it's, you know, it's from Japan or something like that.
Yeah, I've looked this up before, but I've forgotten now. But I think it was originated in Japan, but was first in an English newspaper, I think.
Let's roll it in with Spider-Man and we'll have him as Dr. Sudoktagon.
Yes.
Sudoktagon. Yeah.
Wait, was Dr. Octopus, was he a Dr. Octagon?
Oh, was he not? Well, I thought he was Dr. Octagon.
Dr. Octopus.
That explains the eight arms.
Well, it's because the eight arms really helped him in the UFC.
Oh, yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Did he go in UFC?
No, but that's played in an octagon.
Oh, okay. I am really dumb on this episode. Hey?
Underwater fighting club? Is that right? Octopus? Is that right?
Underwater fighting club.
Yeah.
I think that's our next idea.
Yeah.
So Octopus has got eight arms, so yes, probably pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What?
Are we fighting sea creatures?
Yeah, sea creature versus sea creature.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, the crab.
In its own weight division, like, it's not like you're having a crab versus like a mako shark or something.
Although, I mean, that would be appointment viewing for me. I would absolutely tune in for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
I also think that the shark would struggle to, because the crab's down there on the ground. The shark, the way its mouth is designed, its nose is sort of in front of its mouth.
Yeah.
So it's not good for picking things off a flat surface.
You're right.
I think you could rope a dope sort of the shark and you would just be battering its nose constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to get to the
wears itself out, and then it's nip time.
Yeah,
nip that fin, nip the nose.
Oh yeah,
getting that nip in the nostril, that'd be the worst.
Mm. And then if you pull a shark backwards,
I don't know
if a crab has got the strength to do that, but if you pull a shark backwards, doesn't it muck it up with its gills or something?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, muck it up. I think that's the technical term.
Muck it up. Yeah.
This shark has been mucked up.
Are you saying that? So that would be top of the bill, crab v shark, or on the undercard?
Look, I'd like the night to start out with crab v.
You've got to work up to krill versus blue whale.
I mean, a whale against a single krill.
Okay. Now that's interesting because you got to fight it first.
Mm. And if the krill, because I think most krill are kind of, they're not intent on doing any harm.
Mm.
Right, they're very much like they've very much accepted their fate. I assume that they're just going to be swallowed up in a huge mouth, right? And so they don't fight back.
Mm.
But if
which is quite zen,
yeah, it's very zen. I think zen is the right word. And
so they know they're whale fodder from when they're born.
I'm yes. pretty sure. I'm pretty
they're
sure.
They're aware of that.
I'm pretty sure their parents build in sort of like a defeatism into them, like yeah. a, just an acceptance. Sort of.
Instead of the birds and the bees kind of talk from the father or the mother krill, yeah. it's basically you are whale food.
Yeah, the you and the void.
Yeah.
Like the you
yeah.
Wow.
That is not a, that is, we have the birds and the bees talk, you know, your parents sit you down and talk you and tell you about love and sex, etc. But at no point do they sit you down and talk to you about the inevitability of death. And I think that that should be a good one. They sit you down, they have the krill and the whale talk with you as well.
Yes.
Maybe a couple of weeks after the,
yeah.
The birds and the bees.
I mean, you know, it's not that, you know, I mean, obviously you're already speaking about it as an analogy anyway. But you know, we're this small thing who gets enveloped by this darkness.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem.
Hang on, are you talking as a krill or?
Well, as a human, you know, we are. You know, we're just awaiting. You know, the giant floating time.
Yes, we're kind of human krill in a way.
Exactly.
And, or krill. And the universe is the whale.
Eternity or oblivion. Maybe oblivion's the whale.
Is that so that's where the idea of those in those kind of new age shops where you see orca killer whales in space.
Yeah.
Is this
a thing?
Yeah, you know those paintings where you see whales in space? I think usually orca. Anyway,
is there often a rainbow in there?
There's rainbows. There might be a unicorn looking up at it, but I'm
from
just,
Earth.
From Earth, maybe Earth's out of the picture.
With a telescope, or
no, they can see it.
Okay,
but I'm just saying this picture might be a cosmic representation of what we're talking about right now. Sort of the idea of we are krill to the universe's whale.
Absolutely. Yeah,
maybe it's not your parents who sit you down and have this conversation with you. I think your grandparents sit you down and have the conversation with you.
If they're alive.
If indeed they're alive and the great whale of eternity hasn't already
swallowed them
and then sort of pushed them up against its baleen with its tongue and filtered out the the carcasses of the many.
I guess just slowly digested them with stomach acids and things like that. You know, I guess that wouldn't be a great way to go for a krill.
No.
But I guess maybe the parents don't tell them about that part.
Yeah, I think you end the analogy before it gets to the digestion.
Just to the swallow. Yeah, you've swallowed up. That's about it.
Yeah, you're swallowed up. You cop a mean swallowing. But just to go back to our underwater fighting championship.
Well, that's where I was going back to.
Right.
Yeah, cut that rest out.
Because
no, don't cut it out.
I think another advantage for the krill and the krill versus the whale matchup is that I assume this all takes place inside some sort of cage, you know. The whale's going to be so big, it's going to be very restricted. It's essentially already sort of trapped in a shark net. And I think if the krill can just wait it out, the whale won't be able to come up for air and will just suffocate and die.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's the usual tactic.
Yeah, that's the standard.
Yeah. There'd be that and then that and maybe like sort of going into their little holes, you know, like if they've got like ears or eyeballs, you know, if you can get in that, I reckon it'd be very uncomfortable if they got into that part, you know, like under your eyelid or whatever like that. That is completely, you know, like debilitating to have like
that's illegal though in UFC though.
No eye gouging.
Yeah,
and no crawling in under the eyelid and irritating. What about getting it? But if you do get in the ear, you get in the ear, you could whisper all sorts of dispiriting things. You could really, you know, you could talk them down, pretend to be their conscience and tell them that it's a
your mammal.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't belong here.
Yeah. Do the fish have trainers in their corner? I mean, I know the cage is like eight sided, like you were saying before, octagon.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
But UFC, do they have trainers in one of their eight corners? And can they have a choice of corner?
And do they change corners, or do you always know where they are?
Yeah.
Is the octagon always spinning?
Spinning. Yeah. if they were just dizzy. I think that would be very funny if they were dizzy at all times. So we have it. So the thing is spinning, right? The octagon is spinning.
Not too fast though.
Not too fast, no. But the camera is rigged to the octagon. So from our point of view as the audience, it looks like it's stationary. But from the inertial forces experienced by the fighters are always throwing them out to the extremities, and they're dizzy.
Yeah, DFC. The Dizzy Fighting Championships.
And when they're not using the octagon for fighting matches, they slow it down and use it as a revolving restaurant or something.
Yeah,
like. I think that's beautiful. Or one giant Lazy Susan.
Speed it up, use it as a salad spinner.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course.
Once you've got some large spinning sort of cage, why not sort of, in its downtime, like David Sharma, you know, a candidate for Wentworth, said, when schools aren't being used, like, you know, they're only used a third of the time, why don't we put them on Airbnb? I think you're spinning Ultimate Fighting cage. Chuck it up there. Mm-hmm. People can use it as a giant salad spin.
Philosophical question, though.
Yes.
Salad underwater in a spinning salad. Can it ever be dry?
Sure, yeah. I mean, maybe the spinning would sort of extract some of the salt or something like that. I don't know. Or is it kind of more of a centrifuge? Maybe we could use it for sort of for the early stages of sort of making nuclear bomb grade uranium or something like that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a market economy. I think if that's what the market wants to use this for, if the the North Koreans or something want to hire it for a couple of hours to refine some plutonium, then that's just what the market wants, and we'd be fools not to take their $27.50 a night plus cleaning fee.
I would just like to see one category of the underwater fighting club be man versus a sea creature. And again, same weight class. So,
right.
Because
what are we talking, like a tuna?
Yeah, I guess tuna, but anything that's like, if you can find a squid that is the same weight as you, which I guess in the ocean, we're all weightless. So it's actually your weightless class.
Is that the case? Is that the case that we're all weightless in the ocean?
I think you do have some weight.
No, weightless.
No? Okay, so it's like space.
I'm thinking of orcas in space.
Yeah.
Okay. You fight sea creatures.
Yeah.
In space.
Great. Okay.
Yeah. In a tag team.
Tank team. No. Sorry. I don't.
Tank team underwater. Tag team in space.
Yeah, tag team in space. Man, one sea creature versus one man, one sea creature.
Also,
and both the sea creatures are also male.
Sure. Yeah.
For balance.
Just for balance. I don't
know. And the sea creatures wear a mask like in Mexican wrestling just to...
I think that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also so that they can breathe.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, just this, I was thinking of an orca's spacesuit would just be mostly like a tank over its hole, over its back hole. You could have it could have its mouth free to do whatever it wants. Right? With us, we need to cover our mouth when we're in space, because that's where we're breathing from. Mm-hmm. But they have their mouth free, so they could be holding, like, you know, tools, and if they're fixing the outside of a ship or whatever, they've got their mouth free to like hold a screwdriver while they sort of fit
with their arms. Yeah.
Well,
that
must
be so good for them to keep their flippers free for that fine manual work.
Well, because a flipper is already kind of essentially like a, what's that screwdriver with just the flat.
A regular flathead screwdriver.
Flathead screwdriver. So if you had a whale space station, they could just use ones that, you know, they like screws that are big enough that you could just use your flipper.
I would argue that if you'd never progressed beyond the flathead screwdriver, there's no way you would have made it to space.
I think
Phillips head screws are one of the crucial stepping stones to conquering the galaxy.
Well, that's why they have their mouth free, so that they can hold a Phillips head in case somebody's put one in.
Right, but then they'd have to spin their entire bodies to screw in the...
Well, no, they just hold it with the two flippers.
Wait.
So they're holding it there while they're screwing other things with their hands.
Okay,
with their
right.
flippers.
Yeah, sure. And
right?
then
when they need the extra screwdriver, they take it from their mouth, put it in their flippers... And then just do this, like just.
Are you saying they're not wearing a space helmet though?
Yeah, I'm saying that. Well, they don't have to.
They just have a space plug that goes into their blowhole.
Well, no, just an air. Yeah, just air. Just an air sort of thing into their
space plug.
Yeah, a space plug into their blowhole. They can have their mouth free because they don't breathe through their mouth.
Don't they?
I mean, they probably could.
They probably can, but they choose not to, so that they can have their mouth free,
to hold screwdrivers.
Hold screwdrivers.
Come on, Wardy.
I would go the opposite way and have the blowhole as your little sort of where you hold all your tools and just
it's basically
grab it out of
a little pen holder like you might have on your desk. The challenge then is, are they able to reach up there with a flipper? I don't know if their flippers reach around to the blowhole.
Or do they kind of like, do they just have a button that they can press on their chest or whatever, where different screwdrivers and tools cut, just stick out of their blowhole, and then they just do all their work from the blowhole? So it's just, it's like lodged in there, and then they kind of just spin themselves because they're used to spinning like that, like from when they were swimming, from when they were sort of water-based creatures.
Yeah.
Just a question on screwdrivers.
Yeah, thank God.
Do you imagine inventing the screwdriver, and then along comes Phillips, and just all he does is add a little cross bit to your original screwdriver, and then Mr. Arrogant names it after himself.
That's true,
right? Yeah. Well, you haven't named your original screwdriver, like a Smith's screwdriver or something.
Yeah.
You'd be incredibly annoyed and disappointed.
Yeah, it's incredibly arrogant. And really, if you say you are Smith and you've made the regular screwdriver and then Philip just adds an extra cross, really he's just made a double Smith. Right, that's still your idea.
I know. You'd be kicking yourself though that you didn't name the screwdriver after yourself.
Sure.
Unless your name was John Screwdriver.
John Screwdriver. Yeah. John Regular. Oh no.
And two, you'd be kicking yourself that you didn't. I presume you didn't take out some sort of patent and reap the eternal benefits of sales of Phillips head screwdrivers.
Ironically, your grip on the screwdriver industry slipped out like a regular screwdriver out of one of your very screws.
Yes.
That's why I think these days they teach entrepreneurs and inventors to, when you invent a thing, you got to then invent every version of it that could possibly exist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that way you're kind of undercutting your competition.
So like you invent the Dyson Airblade.
Okay, but
then you also have to invent one that sort of takes all the water and then freezes it and gives it back to you as ice cubes to take away.
Yeah, and then sometimes you do the one that is a portable one that you put on your mouth to blow out candles on your birthday when you don't have lung capacity.
And dry your tongue when you want an excuse to not lick any stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you just invent every variety that way. Like,
that'd take a long time though, wouldn't it?
I think you could probably get a computer to do a lot of it. Just take keywords and you just switch them out, right? And you automate it and then you just, you patent them.
Or interns?
Digitally.
Interns to do it?
Yeah, you get interns. Yeah.
But you said when they teach you that sort of stuff at entrepreneur school, I'm pretty sure the screwdriver story is chapter one in the textbook of the mistakes not to make.
Yeah, which is to just make something quite good and useful and then be undercut.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean,
how would it be if aliens came down to Earth and the great technology that they wanted to share with us was the Phillips screwdriver?
Sorry, guys, we've already got it. Thank you, but
they could be really offended.
Not time travel, or sort of.
Oh no! We have crossed the eons of the black inky eternity of space to bring you the greatest discovery our ancient race has ever.
Could you tell us how to travel long distances through space?
No, you don't understand. It's a screwdriver that enables you to screw in screws with a sort of a cross shape.
Things will sort of be held in place, and it's kind of like a nail. Essentially, it does everything that a nail can do, but you turn it a little bit more.
Yeah, now we sort of already got one of those.
We already have those. We magnetize the tips so they stay onto your screwdriver.
Yes,
magnetize the tip. God damn it.
What if we cross the eons to another alien civilization to bring them gifts of technology, what would we take? Maybe the Dyson Airblade.
Dyson Airblade, a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
I mean, Dyson Airblade is pretty good because.
Dyson Airblade feels like something that if we came across the right alien enemy, like say it was some kind of land based squid or something, it could be a very effective weapon against them.
Yes.
You know, to sort of dry
their skin. Yeah.
Suck them, their flappy little limbs. Or
a great twist at the end of the story is that is Dyson himself probably pipes up. Nobody's been listening to him. But then he pipes up and shows them that the Dyson Airblade can indeed destroy the... Much like the common cold destroyed the Martians in War of the Worlds.
Or seawater killed the Triffids in Attack of the Triffids, in the movie at least. That one was particularly like, really?
What?
Seawater? The Triffids, Day of the Triffids. In the movie, Day of the Triffids, they kill the Triffids with seawater. They
really?
Squirt them. Yeah, they're in a lighthouse or something. They squirt them with water and the Triffids go, oh, no!
It can be very dehydrating.
Mm. Right.
You know, so then they die to dehydration.
You're not thinking of Signs.
No, that was just regular water, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, regular water. Seawater. Yeah.
Tap water.
Sorry. God, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
That was totally different. I could be wrong, but if I am, I will kill myself. So if anyone brings it to my attention, I want you to know... that you will have killed, you'll have my blood on your hands.
You know, there was a sequel to Day of the Triffids, an officially, official sequel to called Night of the Triffids, sanctioned by the Wyndham Estate. Yeah, I haven't read it, but
Not written by.
No, because John Wyndham died in the 60s, probably. But
Saltwater, was it?
It was.
Yeah,
yeah, in a lighthouse.
Yeah. Was he that guy in that famous photo of the lighthouse with that huge wave and then the lighthouse
That's
keeper
him.
Looks out?
That's him.
Yeah.
That was John Wyndham?
That's him.
Anyway, all that seawater landed on him, right? Turns out he was allergic.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah. That was the commentary position for the Underwater Fight Club, too. Just in the lighthouse looking down. And
wow, so you have to like try to like see through the reflections on the top of the water and
well, and quite a lot of sloshing sort of
you know, whitewash.
You do have a Dyson Aquascope though.
Oh,
yes,
nice.
That's another little
thing. One of the major sponsors of the competition.
The Dyson,
Aquascope.
So does it blow air or is
it blows air in a tunnel like kind of formation that allows you to almost make a tunnel through the ocean down to So you're basically looking through clean air.
I think this is that's actually a pretty cool idea because you can get those water, you know, sucking. What are those things in the ocean? I believe the Nautilus was sucked at. Yeah, whirlpool, right?
Maelstrom.
Yeah, yeah. That's more in the sky. Maybe a maelstrom.
No.
You can have a maelstrom in anything.
Definitely in the water.
Could you have a maelstrom in custard?
Yes, you could.
Yeah, great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great.
What about with just physical objects? Let's say it was like a...
like in Poltergeist. Like in Poltergeist. They open the door and all the stuff's going swirling around in the air.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all the toys in the kids' room. You could call that a maelstrom.
Like a bucket of Angry Birds? Could
Why
that,
not?
Under
yes.
the right conditions,
yes.
have a
yes.
maelstrom in there?
Yes.
Yeah, great.
Mm-hmm. I think maelstrom's just a cooler word than whirlpool. And more a clever... Shows that I'm more clever than you.
Yeah. And for some reason, it makes me think of Goethe.
Yeah, right.
Well, there was a story by... listen in, get your pens out for this one.
All right.
There was a story by Edgar Allan Poe called Descent into the Maelstrom.
Oh, yeah, right. And somebody was falling into a twirly thing?
Yep.
No, they were going to the beach.
Actually, the name of
a
place.
But it was a great title.
But it was a very...
It sounds better than Descent into the Whirlpool, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Because then that's got pool in it, which makes you sound like you're going to have fun.
If I was the white goods manufacturer, I would have named myself Maelstrom.
I
would have. Just sounds more classy, like Smeg or Bosch or...
Sure.
Smeg.
I think...
Smeg's classy.
I think both Smeg and Bosch are terrible names for white goods, and they shouldn't have been allowed to get as far as they did. I think the only thing that would be worse as a name is possibly Maelstrom because it also conveys the idea of sort of indiscriminate destruction, which is not necessarily something you want to associate with your dishwasher.
Sure. No, but they might just only make washing machines, which do rely on the water going around
and
around.
I think even so, the sort of the terrifying vortex taking one into the deep unknown...
Yeah.
With violence and unpleasantness aplenty is not a good name.
I think the only company that really could have called themselves Maelstrom would have been Dyson, but he learned from the screwdriver guy that you got to name the company after yourself.
After yourself, yes.
So he's
yes. What about Miele? Happy with Miele as a brand name in white goods?
It makes me think of honey because of the first four letters are honey in French.
Miel.
Miel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I think this was that German, Miele?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good quality vacuum cleaner, but now I have a robot vacuum cleaner, so I don't use my regular vacuum cleaner.
A robot vacuum cleaner?
Got it as a present.
Jeez, I wouldn't trust one of them.
No? I reckon that it is...
AI.
It's a Chinese company, and I think they're probably stealing all my interesting Wi-Fi information and dust.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, and cleaning what the Chinese want to be cleaned in your house, not what you want.
Which is...
Certain areas of the house. Jeez, my study is very dirty. Why isn't the robot vacuum cleaner cleaning my study?
My study is very dirty. That's really undermining my productivity and leading to a general slump in Australia's economic fortunes, reducing our standing in the Pacific and making it easier for the Spratly Islands to be developed in the South China Sea.
Huh. Yes.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
Exactly. sneaky robot vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it is... You know, the fact that they got into our houses.
Should I write
houses
sneaky and... Chinese robot vacuum? Does that make it seem... I mean, look, we are suggesting that the Chinese are spying and trying to... But I think that's the whole joke, right?
I think that's a large portion of the joke. It could be anyone. We could John Marsden it, and we could just call them strangers from the north, you know?
Is that what he did?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
In a way, that's even more racist to me.
Really?
Nah.
You could just use a slur. Now, when we were going into...
Sorry, have we got five ideas yet? I've got to catch the tram. I'm joking.
We do have five, but I'm looking...
You got us good, though, Wardy. You got us good. We really thought you had to catch the tram.
I drove, stupidly.
Oh, yeah, well, but if you caught the tram, you'd still be stuck on Sydney Road, which was the problem in the first place, right?
No, Sydney Road was the traffic was okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
I was on the way along Sydney Road, I was thinking if Sydney Road came up on this podcast, I was thinking, well, what does Sydney Road mean to a listener in America or France where meal means honey? I mean, do they... Mm. Do you need to describe? Just it's a busy road, isn't it, with trams, which are large bus-like things that run along the middle of the road.
They have wheels, which are kind of circular things. They often are fitted on axles.
And there are shops on either side of the road.
Sorry, a shop is sort of a box, a big box with a flap in the front where you can go in and you swap things for other things.
You can sort of buy smaller boxes.
Inside the box it could be stuff, but not shops. The smaller boxes aren't shops.
Yeah, you don't buy things in the smaller
box. We use money in the shops like you do, listener.
Now, money, I realise, sounds like honey.
Yes.
But with the
that
M
makes you think of meal, eh?
Think of meal, so we're sort of back where we started, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Sydney Road. So
I think that maybe people who are not from here are happy to learn a little bit about Melbourne piece by piece by having little things introduced to them that they've never heard of, like Sydney Road.
And being drip-fed.
Being drip-fed, and then maybe one day they'll Google it and they'll be like, oh, what is Sydney Road? And then they'll look it up and they'll go, oh, it's just this road that kind of has like a...
It's weird that the only thing that they know about Melbourne is that it has a Sydney Road in it, Sydney being the other big city in Australia.
Yeah, that's the kind of intrigue that will lead to a definite Google.
I'm sure on Google Earth you can look up Sydney Road and take a virtual cruise along the road.
Oh, there you go.
They should look at it at Sydney Road, and then you can go back in time on Google Maps, and you can see what it looked like sort of 10 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. There's that option for every time basically they've sent through the Google car or whatever.
Oh.
So Google Maps actually does allow you to travel through time and space.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Space-time. Einstein would have loved Google Maps.
Oh, he would have loved it.
If only you'd live to see Google Maps.
That was the real tragedy, I think.
It was, yeah.
Of Einstein's death.
Yeah.
From?
Malaria, I think.
Right, I thought it was salt.
Malaria, really?
I thought it was salt water poisoning. But
I thought it was a whale. It was a whale, though.
It was something that tied into something we said earlier that sounds funny when we call it back. Wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's what it
might
was.
I hope so. Anyway, it would be rather than the sadness of somebody actually dying of something probably he got from a mosquito.
He died from Welcome to This Podcast.
We don't say that.
What podcast?
No, Welcome to This Podcast.
Oh, don't you?
No. We were.
It's so incredible.
He died of having Michael Ward introduced to him.
Really?
That would be amazing,
he
wouldn't it?
He died of the Planet Broadcasting sting.
He died of...
pressing play on the podcast app.
Yeah.
If only Einstein had lived... See, I think if somebody could have lived forever, Einstein would have been a good one. But I think he would have had to have, you know, sort of undergone some kind of surgery, some kind of, you know, mutation or something like that to make him live. Mm. So he would still be around, but he might have, like, been given an exoskeleton and a, like a, sure, you know, sort of like a...
So it'd be like a crab.
Yeah.
And we could fight him against
with a shark.
A shark in an exoskeleton, to be fair.
Okay, so humanity gets together and mm-hmm. we all chip in, everyone in the world chips in a couple of bucks to buy Einstein a robotic exoskeleton that allows him to live forever. But in doing so, we all sort of own Einstein. We get to sort of tell him what to do. How long do you think it is before, like, he's towards, and also bear in mind that towards the end of his life, he wasn't really making any valuable theories, okay? Didn't really progress his theory of the grand unified theory of everything.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
So, you know, is it like 50, 60, 100 years in the future? Humanity's been funding keeping Einstein alive this whole time.
Yep.
And he hasn't given us much. How long until we get him to fight a shark?
Well, that's right. It's kind of like, it's sort of like Brexit. At some point, somebody just puts it to a vote. Somebody decides, you know what, I'll just put it to a vote, all right?
Yeah, we'll just sort this out. People are saying, like, there's a lot of dissent and, you know, a lot of right-wing websites are sort of building up the idea that we have to let Einstein fight a shark. We'll just do a referendum. We'll get it out of the way, okay? I am sure that the good people of the Earth won't vote for Einstein to fight a shark. Mm-hmm. And then it'll have been put to bed. There'll be no further debate on the issue. Yeah. Anyway, we put it to a referendum. It's like 60% of people want Einstein to fight a shark.
Yeah.
And then we're like, right, okay, well, now we've got to make this happen.
And now we have to create. Not only do we have to create this underwater sort of octagon. So I guess it's like a, but it's like a, what's a sort of a 3D octagon? You know how you do what you say?
Dodecahedron? Like, I don't know.
That's also 2D. You know, so rectangular prism. So it's probably just octangular prism.
Octangular.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think so? Octangular prism?
No.
What about an octangular cylinder? Like
what do you call like a? Wait. Okay. So is it just flat? Is it just
this
flat?
This is the kind of details we get stuck on instead
of
the big idea.
Is it just flat
fighting
on the top and flat on the bottom? Your octangular prism. Is it just
be.
Flat on the top and flat
can
on the
be,
bottom?
Can be, or it could just be. It could be octagons both ways.
But
flat.
But then it would be like a soccer ball or something.
Yeah, look, all right. Just for the sake of it, it'll be like a cylinder but octagon shape. So it's just long.
A long octagon.
It's long, and then it's got enough width to fit a whale in or a mako shark or whatever. And then Einstein as a crab with a sort of like, yeah. But I think if we're going to get him to fight in this league,
yeah,
he's not only going to have to...
Oh, this would be the 20,000 league under the sea.
Yeah. It'll be one of those leagues. That's one of the 20,000.
You have lots of jewels in that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And he'll be one of those crabs that collects
Jules Verne.
I was trying to work out.
I was going to suggest it was one of those crabs that puts sort of decorates its shell.
Also, there are a lot of duels, like duel one-on-one fights. I was very thrown by that. And also probably a lot of jewels, J-E-W-E-L, on the belt that they win.
Also...
On the inflatable life belt that takes them to the surface.
Pirates bury treasure underwater.
Do they?
Not intentionally, but yes.
Oh, really? So when they were burying...
No, they don't.
They didn't do that underwater? They would actually just do that on land?
How do you dig a hole underwater if you're a pirate?
X marks the spot.
Get a shovel.
Yeah, right.
You go down there. You get one...
I feel like you skipped over some steps, haven't you?
So, okay, two guys.
You can't say go down there.
Okay, two guys, two pirates, one's got a shovel. All right, that shovel's already weighing him down. And he's also holding a big chest filled with... with metal.
Okay.
Another one's holding a locker, like a Davy Jones locker that he's... That's where Davy Jones' locker comes from.
I don't know what a Davy Jones locker is.
It was a heavy locker that they used to enable them to sink to the bottom of the ocean.
Mm. Yeah, right. Well, see, that's really good, because I was going to get the second guy to be swimming downwards, pushing the other person so that they could just sort of stand normally as the hands push them down on the ground.
Right.
The other person's kind of swimming down while the other guy shovels.
Yeah.
Like that. And then eventually they just both together lift the you know, or just tip tip the gold into the ground like that, and then they would sort of put a stick there or something, put two sticks in an X formation. Just they go, remember that bit.
Yeah, you you absolutely got that.
Yeah.
And I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Can I just say Davy Jones's Foot Locker, right, is a pirate shoe shop.
Yes.
And but you know how in regular shoe shops, they have one shoe on the shelf.
Yeah,
and then they've got the other one out the back.
Yeah,
if you so you can't steal it.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, because all pirates have only got one leg.
Yes.
They only have half the shoe on the shelf, and then they have the other half out the back.
Yes.
If you
so they can't. The pirates can't steal it. Yeah. Which is in their nature.
In their nature, very much. I mean, it's a terrible demographic to choose to target your one-legged shoe shop towards the standard pirate.
Absolutely. But,
how do you reckon they mend the shoe right before they do it? Like, I know this is a really awful question that doesn't help anything. But what do you reckon they use? Glue?
Hot glue gun. Hot glue gun.
An HGG.
HGG?
HGG. Hot glue gun.
Oh, HGG.
That's what it's known in the biz.
And do they do this underwater? Or this is not an underwater shop?
No, we're in the shop. No underwater shop. Shop underwater.
Now, sorry, a shop, remember, is just a box with a flap at the front.
Right. Sydney Road.
Sydney Road.
So, but now you're going to have to picture it without Sydney Road, obviously. Yeah. I know that context.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm trying, but.
I think I've just been picturing every sketch idea involves us being underwater.
This is the underwater episode.
If you were smart, you would open a. If Davy Jones Foot Locker was in your street and the shop next door became vacant, if you were smart, you would open like a birdseed
shop. Oh, yeah, sure.
To cater for the parrots.
It's absolute synergy.
For the parrot traffic.
Oh, this is what would happen, right? Somebody would open up a parrot seed place right next door, and then Davy Jones is going to be like, I should have thought of that. And so he's going to just start selling, like, just on the counter, just as little giveaways, like just little bells of seeds and stuff like that.
Point of sale stuff that's like an impulse for the pirate.
Exactly. The parrot. Yeah. And well, because the parrot's got the pirate's ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bird seed. Bird bell.
And the pirate goes, oh, okay, just this once.
But then that guy next door with the bird seed shop, he's getting undercut now. And then they all know criminals.
He brings shoes in.
That's a good idea.
He brings shoes in.
Shoes.
On the counter there.
What about shoes for the wood for the wooden leg as well? You know, like those.
Do you need a shoe for a wooden leg?
Maybe just a rubber stopper.
Yeah, that rubber stopper.
Rubber stopper. They made a movie of that, didn't they?
Rubber stopper. Stephen Hall was in that, wasn't
he? Was. Yes. Rubber stomper. Stopper. Very violent.
There's just a lot of doors slamming until these guys came along.
Yeah. A reference to Romper Stomper, the Australian skinhead film.
Great film.
And this is Rubber Stopper, which is the same movie but with pirates instead of skinheads.
Yep. Yeah.
And I haven't actually seen it, so I don't know anything else that happens.
You've never seen Romper Stomper?
I have not, no.
Oh, wow.
I don't like violence.
Oh, fair enough. You should see it for Stephen Hall. Is in a sailor suit. That's enough. Oh,
is he dressed as a pirate?
No, as a sailor.
Oh, well, there's some crossover.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But
pirates
stoppers.
Never get dressed as sailors. That's one of their things.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
How would you, if you were in the rubber stopper game, how would you diversify your product? Would it just be different colours?
High heel?
Because it's all heel, though.
Yeah.
So just a thick stopper.
Yeah, or maybe a stiletto.
Oh, yeah, thin one.
I don't steal this idea if you're in the rubber stopper game listening.
Yeah.
Because it's copyrighted as I say it. But I'd have a sort of a rubber stopper that lights up every time it hits the ground.
Right.
Like a little light inside. And so that'd be pretty good. Or a little plays a little musical tune.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the look. It's also the sound as well, I think.
Even like, you could... Because you've got a rubber stopper, but maybe you actually liked the sound of the wood hitting
the
wood.
The clip-clop.
Yeah, the clop like that. But that was quite hard on your hip bone.
Yeah.
Just that dunk, dunk, like that. So you put it makes a sound like a...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The clip claw as you go, but you get that sort of soft, cushiony thing like that.
So it just has like a microchip with a little piece of electric sensor, and then maybe it wirelessly sends a signal to a sort of a Bluetooth speaker that's strapped to your belt or something like that.
Or maybe you could make the eye patch could be a speaker.
Like an artificial clip-clop on an artificial leg.
Yeah.
Is incredible.
Yeah, so that's, I think they cancel each other out and it's basically a real leg now.
At that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I do like also these two shops now kind of like one-upping each other. So the Birdseed guys does put shoes on his as the point of sale sort of things. But then he also starts stocking the rubber stoppers. And so people are like, actually, I'm just going to go to this place. I know initially it was just a Birdseed place.
There.
But yeah, you can get not only everything you can get from the shoe shop, but more.
Wait a minute. And then across the road, a guy opens a plank shop. Now what's going on?
Well, now you've got yourself a pirate hub. You've got a
triangular pirate hub.
Yeah, yeah. You've got a real a district.
Yeah. And head on down to Pirate District for all your pirate needs. Planks, rubber stoppers, bird seed, single shoes.
Eye patch speakers.
I would.
The eye patch obviously has a lowercase I.
Yeah.
If I had a child pirate store, I'd call it Eye Patch, or the Eye Patch, or something like that.
Yes, and surely somebody's calling their shop Jolly Rogers.
Come
on down to Jolly Rogers for all your pirate needs.
What about Keel Hall?
Keel Hall's good.
Yeah, you could get a haul
at Keel Hall.
Yeah,
they would advertise late at night, obviously.
Obviously.
What about
when advertising is cheap?
What about this? What about this? Well, then you don't have to spend as much as your gold.
That's right, your doubloons. Yes.
Yeah, I think you want to advertise to the parrots late at night when advertising is cheap.
To the all important parrot demographic.
Yeah.
Which is broken down not only by parrots, but also the age of parrots. You know, 18 to 39 parrots, year-old parrots.
There are parrots who live to like 110.
Some of those grey parrots live really old. And macaws as well might be particularly long-lived.
I did just look up macaws because I remember hearing about a macaw that lived 110, 120 years. But apparently their average age span is about 50.
That's good.
I mean, that's good for them.
And by that time, they're hips going. And they need a leg replacement or a hip replacement. And I don't know, maybe the bird shop is selling tiny little bird peg legs.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would be really nice is if they sold little smaller birds to go only on the parrot's shoulders.
No, it would be a tiny pirate.
Oh, a toy parrot.
It'd be a tiny pirate to go on the shoulder of the parrot. It's the ultimate revenge of the parrot is to have a tiny pirate on their shoulder.
And so do you think the parrots are kind of always plotting against the pirate who's, I guess, sustaining them?
Sure. I think pirates that pamper their parrots, which, by the way, those words are very – pirate and parrot are very similar words.
Pirates pampering parrots is a good tongue twister
pirates
too.
Pirates pampering parrots with purposeful paraphernalia from the parrot pop-up store.
Yeah,
store.
Yeah. Pop-up emporium then.
I can't say the last one. Store. What? Sturrier.
I think you know a pirate who pampers his parrot is maybe a funny character in some way.
You've got to pamper your parrot or else it flies off. It's not sewn to your shoulder or glued to your shoulder. It's there because it wants to be there, and presumably because you are pampering it and it hangs around. But if you don't pamper your parrot, it's off. It's gone.
So you don't think about that you know the pirate is actually being quite tender to one animal. Like, you know, whilst all this kind of, you know, murdering and sort of like, you know, what a throat slitting, I imagine.
Yes,
it's a lot of like slowly running blades across knives. Big, thick.
Jeez.
And not clean blades either.
No.
No, Rusty, you don't show the kind of care to your blade that you do to this small bird. Why are you hitting
it? I don't know. And banging the table as well, Alistair.
It's my new style. I
hate it. I hate it. It makes me angry.
I'm being reckless today.
Yeah, it's all the pirate talk. It's gone to your head.
Anyway, so I think I've kind of written down, it's a Davy Jones footlocker and retail all-out brawl. You know, as this kind of like the pirate knickknacks and the pirate, just that pirate market was huge. This would have been at one of those sort of stopover islands where pirates would go and get.
Yeah, we've basically talked about the evolution of a neighborhood. You know, first somebody takes the plunge to open a pirate themed shop. People say it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And then another shop comes along, and then a third, the plank shop maybe across the road. Suddenly you've got a district. And that attracts certain types.
Yeah.
And then they have an annual pirate street festival.
Absolutely.
And then suddenly you, as a pirate, you can't not go there because this is a thing that serves your needs and it gives you a, like, because everybody is buying all this great pirate equipment from there, you're actually at a disadvantage if you don't go visit this place and get the latest and greatest pirate, you know, knick-knack.
Then you got pirate cafes opening up.
Absolutely.
Pirate restaurants. Pirates are moving in and sort of gentrifying the place.
Absolutely.
That's the Buccaneers, I think, with their buccaneering regular income.
Yes.
I suppose probably people who make boats, or I guess, or do you make a boat as a pirate or do you steal it?
Oh, you'd steal it.
Yeah. But I guess you could have a shop where you could steal boats from.
Yes, I guess so.
But it's okay because the price is built in. To the boats.
That's right.
So, you know, they factor in the fact that all the boats will be stolen when they price them.
So that's right. So all they need to do is sell one boat a year.
One boat for infinity dollars. Doubloons.
I guess
Surely a cafe would be just called Cannonballs. Meet me at Cannonballs.
Surely.
Absolutely.
Surely.
Surely.
And like, name it. Think of another name.
Porridge.
You can't.
Porridge would be served out of a little cannon.
You'll be shot into your bowl from the cannon. You'd have a bowl on your table, and across from the kitchen, they'd fire your
oh, that's cool.
porridge into your bowl. They're very clever.
Oh, I think that's very clever. I was thinking maybe even just the small cannonball, and the porridge is in there, and you light it, and you shoot the porridge into your mouth.
Yeah, I think that's quite good because I think the exploding gunpowder. If we could get it in such a way that the gunpowder cooks. The explosion cooks the porridge,
on
the way to your mouth, and you're down there.
Wow!
So it's served to you in a little cannon, pointing up at an angle. You've got a little tamper there. You tamp it down, and you've got a lighted taper just sitting in a little holder there of some kind. You put the taper to the wick. The wick burns down, and you open your mouth. It shoots and cooks the porridge on its way.
Yep.
To impacting sort of in your soft palate up there at the top of your head.
It's probably cooled in the last few seconds in the air.
As it rushes towards you.
They know the distances.
Oh, they've worked all
well,
that.
Exactly.
They would have worked all that out.
So maybe they measure the weight of measures you on the way down, so they work out how much.
And if you want a job at Cannonballs, you tell you what, you've got to know how to swing on a rope. No question.
Absolutely. It's all rope swinging.
Rope swing, the waiter coming over to your table. Not walking, it's rope swinging.
No, actually.
Yeah, a cutlass between their teeth.
Yes. Which they is a pen.
Ah.
And that's how they take your order.
It's a gimmicky sort of thing.
Sure.
Yeah, instead of the point of the blade. So they kind of have to hold it like up near the tip of the blade. It's kind of wobbling up top. It looks a bit like a quill. But then at the tip of the blade is what is just like a ballpoint.
Yeah. And they've got to say stuff like, you know, they come by when you're eating your meal and everything be okay, that sort of thing. The pirate sort of talk.
Hearty meal, is it?
Are you having a good time?
Yes.
Like they say.
Are you having a good time? Everything be okay?
I guess Tarzan would be quite good at swinging on the rope. So he could, you know, once he's sort of done with his, like, because I guess, you know, his jungle career. He's kind of moved on to the ocean.
Sure.
He's doing all forms of...
And once he moves off the ocean and then into the pirate
back
district.
Back into, like, so I guess this is just off the beach, yeah.
Yeah. I was picturing it around Bourke Street.
Really?
Bourke Street's another street in Melbourne.
Ah, yes.
Learning a lot.
Named, of course, after Mr. Bourke.
A lot of people know that, but there you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Old Mr. Burke.
Yeah. Old Berkey. That's another one you can look up on Google Maps.
Mm-hmm. Have a look. Go through that time vortex.
Just quickly, I wrote down on my hand, and I'm sure this has been done in some sort of pirate comedy of some kind, but Peghead, that's a man who's had his head cut off. A pirate had lost his head in a fight, and they replaced it with a wooden peg.
I think I have seen that.
Fights and stuff, but he's got a... Oh, yeah, seen it?
I think I've seen that in a cartoon, maybe? Like
it seems like something
like that. It comes from peg leg, doesn't it?
Mm, yeah.
That's
right.
But peg head.
Peg head.
Yeah. You know the guy who's all peg?
All right, how about this? Head leg. He's a guy.
So his body was cut off.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gets a head.
And his leg were both cut off, right, in a fight, right? And the surgeon there was sewing things back on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was drunk, or maybe it just there wasn't time to move the head all the way up to the neck to sew it on. He had to sew it onto something. It was down by the leg because it had fallen off. He quickly sewed it onto the nearest available gaping wound, so it's there on the on the leg. And then later on, he was able to secure the leg to the head hole. And now I guess he walks around with a long hat, long pointy hat.
He could hold a piece of wood in his mouth.
Yeah, he holds it. He could
long,
hold a
like
bit
that.
Of, yeah,
like that. You don't think maybe? I see. Yeah. When I was imagining that while you were talking, I was picturing he just lost his leg.
Hmm.
And then for some reason, the surgeon just puts another head on his thing.
Another head?
Yeah.
Down there.
Where his leg was. And then suddenly he's like, no, wait, I don't want a head. And he goes, well, it's already got conscious autonomy now, and it says it wants to stay.
Yeah.
Like that. And then he's like, okay.
It's a real he said, leg said scenario. Who are you going to believe?
What would his pirate name be? Two-headed?
Leg beard?
Leg-headed?
Leg
head,
hip.
Head legged.
Leg head.
Did you say brown beard?
I said leg beard.
What about brown beard?
Yeah, okay. he's got a head for a leg and we call him brown beard. That's good.
On account of his beard is brown.
Well, it's not. It's an ironic nickname.
Oh, I see, yes.
Because it's he's gone grey quite young. We thought that was an ironic thing. I think we should go to the three words.
Sure.
We got the three words from our Patreon supporter today.
Thanks to all our Patreon supporters who can chip in a small amount of money, which really supports the podcast, helps us to keep doing it and feel good and pay our mortgages, Alistair.
Pay the guests.
Pay attention to the guests, which we wouldn't be able to do if we were distracted thinking about money.
Thinking about how poor we are.
And so thank you and bless you.
You've just thanked me because I.
Oh, my God, you?
Up to this point, it's been me contributing all the money to your show.
Really?
Under different names.
Really?
Yeah, so.
My God. Michael.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure, guys. It's just important to me.
No, but you don't know how important it's been to both of us, especially Andy.
And your ability to impersonate those people on Twitter and sort of thing and interact with us.
It's no problem.
It must be almost a full-time job.
Look, guys, when I created podcasting back in 2004, I created it for one reason and one reason only, for guys like you to, you know, share your love of things.
And that's what we do here.
Into microphones. And I'm just happy that it's worked out really well.
So there are no podcast listeners in the world. It's all you.
So it's just the one, the guy who created podcasts is the only guy who listens to. Do you listen to all the podcasts and support all of them?
Of course I do.
So I guess you must do it when you're washing up and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't called podcasting when I first invented it. It was called comedians talking to other comedians about comedy in a very boring and circle jerky way. But I don't know. Somebody coined the phrase podcast. And
okay, circle jerky. It's a new product. It's it's salty.
Yeah,
And all the,
it's circular.
It's circular. So all the jerky strips are a little actually a Mobius strip.
Ah,
we call it circle jerky. And
wait, a Mobius strip isn't a circle.
Yeah, well, it sort of is. It's round, isn't it?
Strippy.
But wouldn't you say it's infinity jerky or infinity?
Infinity jerky. That's what we'll call
infinity
it.
Infinity jerky.
It doesn't have quite the same sort of ring. The name, the tie.
I tell you what, if you ever want to strip paint, do not use Mobius paint stripper because
the paint just ends up on the other side of the
Absolutely.
Board.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very confusing.
Wait, but also calling your thing circle jerky. No, but I really want to stick with the name Circle Jerky. I want when people buy my meat product, I want them to think about a bunch of guys in a room together tossing each other off.
What are you talking about?
Eh?
No, this has got nothing to do with that. It's
what?
I've never even. I don't. I have no idea where you came up with that, Alistair.
What?
What about it's Mobius stripping? It's sort of like the paint stripping, good. But every time you. You remove a piece of clothing, it somehow goes onto another part of the body.
it just sliding. Ends up on your back.
Yeah.
And the music is slowed down in a really weird and
There is that musical phenomenon that you can play where it makes it sound like music is always speeding up or always slowing down.
Right.
It's a way that they can do it, and it's just like a timing thing that makes it sound like it's always speeding up, but it's staying the same pace.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's like a sort of a musical parallelogram.
I don't know, Andy. With you in shapes today, I can't. I'm not even going to bother trying to imagine it.
Anyway,
the three words.
Use the monetary contributions wisely, fellas.
Thank you so much.
Parallelogram is a macaw, right? With a beak on both ends. It's not, I'm sorry.
You're going to take just macaws
move on,
later?
Just move on.
All right, so we got...
I'll take your applause at the end. Yeah.
Today it's the donator and word donator is Drew.
Yeah, me, but anyway.
Yes. Yeah, but as... Yep. Drew Peisner, but in the middle.
Yep.
That's one of your. Yes, I love that Drew character Peisner. Of yours.
One of your alii.
He's also used the middle name Bonzer or Bonza, I guess. Bonzer. But I think he's from America.
He sounds pretty Aussie.
Or the United Kingdom.
Mm.
Anyway, the three words today. Thank you, Drew and Michael.
Pleasure.
And the three words today are Cirque.
All.
CIRQUE.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Duh.
Yep.
Subway.
Cirque du Subway. Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about Cirque du Soleil is that they have a sort of a set menu when you go along to see it. You don't get to pick how many flips, backflips, and, clown appearances and things where they roll down that rope want. So, I mean, maybe a sort of a choose your own Cirque du Soleil type scenario, or you can go along to the Big Top or whatever and you'd say what you want. I mean, obviously, I think there'd be a few more deaths because really they have to rehearse those things quite a bit in order to get them to the non-death point.
Locked into sort of muscle memory and things like that. But, I think, a circus where you get to tell them what to do.
Mm.
I mean, I guess it would be cool to just have a circus performer come to your house and you can just tell them what to do, like clean that and, go and...
Yeah, I guess just having a slave would be amusing in some way. You're right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be amusing as long as it's...
No, you're right. Yeah. Sorry.
But I mean, I guess if they can do tricks.
Yeah.
Like sort of paint your roof. I guess they would be good. Like you could trust them to do it without having to invest in a harness and things like that.
That would be great.
Paint your roof.
Mm.
You get your roof painted every 10 years or so.
So, I mean, one of those tumbling type people, if you could just cover them with paint and have them just roll around on your roof for a while doing the flips.
One of those tumbling type people.
Yeah, the ones.
Acrobats?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
but one of the ones who tumbles.
Yeah.
You know, not like one of the ones who does the poles or whatever.
Yeah, or the swingy trapeze or something.
Yeah, or that big curtain. That big curtain feels like it's a new thing, right?
The big curtain.
You know the big long curtain that they kind of just twirl their arms around? They just kind of, they backflip the way up, and then they kind of do a few things.
Sort of like a rope, but it's like a big silky, flappy
flappy
thing.
Curtain?
So I wouldn't really call it a curtain. I don't think it's wide enough to be a curtain.
I think it's pretty wide.
Yeah, well, I guess we're both, agree.
Okay, but if you had a curtain, let's say a really long curtain.
Okay.
Scrim.
A scrim? I'm not sure what that is.
Scrim? Is that a word?
It sounds like something pirates would say.
No, it's like scrim is like in theatre, the backdrop, like a scrim. Maybe it's, you see through it, I don't know, but anyway.
Like a see-through backdrop.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very useful, semi-see-through.
Like a curtain comes down at the theatre and hides the performers. Mm. A scrim is used in the background where maybe you can sort of see silhouettes or something.
Yeah,
right. I'm gonna have to look it up.
Yeah, maybe scrim. Like glass? Is glass semi-transparent?
Is glass semi-transparent? I don't think you'd have a glass curtain, a scrim or curtain in the theatre. It would be a bit dangerous.
I have no idea how anyone has ever made something transparent. That seems like that's the most difficult thing.
Mm, it's weird that light can just go through stuff. Doesn't make sense. Right?
That's the greatest of all magic.
Like, if it turned out that like glass wasn't really there or something, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I thought so. It's probably like hollow or something. It's the only way light would be able to get through. It's a trick.
Glass could be dark matter, maybe? That's what it's been. That's what it was the whole time.
You can't see it with the telescopes.
Can't see it
with
telescopes. It's just glass.
Yeah.
Just heaps of glass everywhere. Big lenses and stuff like that floating through the
air. That'd be horrible.
Why?
Well, glass up all in space.
Oh, what, because it's so fragile.
Yeah. I mean, you get cut or something.
Well, I mean, it could still all be in a big blob.
One big blob of glass.
Yeah, just a big blob of glass.
Geez, you would have wanted to be a glazier at the Big Bang, wouldn't you? A lot of work then.
It would have been a really good time. A lot of work. But then do you think so much work that the pay would have been quite low?
So much work they would charge what they wanted and sort of could pick and choose the jobs, I suppose.
Mm.
Mm, that's true, yeah. And there would have been a lot of heat and things like that, so that would have also been helpful. Very available heat.
Yes.
Very available.
Yeah.
Mm, I bet glaziers these days just sit down and talk about that sort of time.
Yeah.
Sort of like when, it was sort of like bricklaying during the preparation for the Sydney Olympics.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be, if I was a glazier, for when they were getting ready for the Sydney Olympics, I would have just switched to bricklaying just for that couple of years.
Yeah.
Because there was so much work laying bricks. I heard they were making $2, $3, maybe even $4 a brick.
What were all the bricks for? Building, were they building?
Right out there in Homebush.
Mm. Was this for the equestrian?
It's all bricks on the ground.
Equestrian hurdles, was it?
Turtles.
Equestrian hurdles. Is this what you're talking
about?
The walls?
The
horses
over
jumped over?
Bricks.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right, this is a bit niche, but I'd like to see a glacier.
Yes.
Glacier. I'd like to see a glacier on his first day as a bricky. Right? Get this, all right?
Hang on. A glacier as on his first day as a bricky.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
he swapped
because of the Olympics because they're getting $4 a brick.
Yeah.
Right? He drives up there. He's got two bricks on the back of his truck there, all very neatly sort of angled up, leaning up there. And they're on bits of foam or whatever to stop them shattering. And then he gets out those big suction caps things and he and his mate pick up one brick. And then they carry it across to the building site and they delicately ease it into position.
Yes.
There, then they go get the other brick and they put that in and then they drive back to the depot. I mean, it would be hilarious.
So the truck just says, like, you know, Michael Ward's glazier, formerly brick. Oh, no, sorry. Michael Ward's bricklaying, formerly glazier.
Yeah, like yeah.
They walk across the street. Some car comes. They don't know which way to go.
And the car goes through the brick.
Through the brick.
Oh, no.
And the brick shatters everywhere.
Shatters everywhere. They try to pick another one up like that.
Mm.
And then there's, like, you know, a karate guy comes through, punches through the brick this time.
Yeah, of course he would, though.
Well, like, it's not really a glazier thing. It's not really a glass thing. It's more of a brick thing.
Then there's a bricklayer who has always been, you know, his own man.
Mm.
Doesn't follow the crowd.
Mm.
And, you know, all these bricklayers flocking to the bricklaying trade. Bugger that, I'm going to become a glazier.
Yes.
That's right.
Right? So mid-career, changes horses.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he just cuts little bits of glass and puts it into place with mortar.
But also he's on one of those building sites where he's working with his mate. His mate's up on the first story. Yeah. He's down there with the sheets of glass. He just tosses them up to his friend up there who catches the, you know, the 3 mil
wearing glass.
Oh, of course. It's very safety conscious.
Obviously.
Have you ever seen the film The Omen?
I think so.
great death of David Warner's character, where he's beheaded by a piece of glass that's comes flying off the back of a truck.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
If you want to see somebody then, beheaded by a sheet of glass.
Yeah, they were able to graft his leg onto his neck, is that
correct? Yeah, they were able to do that.
Do you think that bricklayer former glazier could count as the Cirque du Soleil?
I think it came from, it was definitely inspired by. And as a sketch, I think it's niche.
I think it stands up. I think it stands up. I think that could have slid straight onto what was that one you worked on for a bit? The one
Full Frontal.
No. Well, yeah, I know you've worked
Orca
on
Orca in Space.
Orca in Space. Now the more recent one,
Open Slather.
That could have slid right into Open Slather.
I'm not even going to say those words on podcast.
No problem. But like that, look, it could have slid right in there.
Jeez, that was a rubbish show.
Oh no, we got you.
No, but it's okay. He's the only person who listens. He can say what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, it'll feel really satisfying getting to hear yourself say that.
That's right. How do you like that, Michael, eh?
Are we ready to go through the sketches?
Take us through the sketches, Alistair.
All right. Look, okay, this first one.
We don't need a preface.
It's not a fully fleshed out sketch yet, but it's just...
Yes, it is.
It's, okay, it's quicker crosswords to lower the bar. You know, it's like, I guess, look, it could start just like as a business meeting at the newspaper. We need... A lot of our sort of dumber listeners are not going to the puzzle page, and we're not getting as many eyes.
Listeners to our newspapers. This is how dumb they are. They just hold it up to their ear, and they get annoyed when they're not able to do the crossword.
Yeah, a lot of our readers, we're getting a lot of stats back. We've sort of been doing focus groups and things like that, watching some of our dumber
quicker crosswords. Readers.
Yeah, we need quicker crosswords that they can do. And so then we've kind of come up with that sticker one that you can just stick over the thing and you can have it done.
It's sort of a join the dots, like they have little very faint lines of the words in the crossword and you just trace over the top of them.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right, yeah. It's like a find a word.
But the words are just
there. The words are already in there.
And without the other letters that make it confusing.
Yeah. There they are. There's that one.
Sure.
Yeah.
That one goes across. That one goes down there.
And obviously there's also the one that's already just completed and you can write your name at the top.
Like you do with most crosswords.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you listen to.
Then we've got the guy who picks up by pre-doing crosswords at home. But then he does them quickly in front of a woman as a way of picking up. And then the woman really falls for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then they wind up in a scenario in which...
they have to defuse a bomb.
They have to defuse a bomb by doing the crossword. And she's like, quick, go ahead and do it.
And I think in the sketch, you could cut between those two scenarios quite harshly. And just at the, you know, in the bomb defusing scenario, they just come into a room. They're like sweaty. Their clothes are tattered and there's gunshots outside. And they're like, just, oh my God, that went crazy really, really quick. Mm. We just got to defuse this bomb. And then you're in.
And then the bomb diffuser guy who's also there, he's like, I'm sorry, it's completely wireless.
Mm.
There's not a single wired. You know that technology that they use for wireless technology? They use that on every wire. So there's nothing we can do. You're going to have to do the crossword like that. So there's, you know, just to make it clear that there's no way out.
And it does get down to one word. Somehow he completes it and it gets down to one word, and it could be one of two words. Is it snap or is it snip? He's got SN something P, and it's like a parallel of the cut the red wire or cut the blue wire. Is it snap or snip?
Do I snip really the blue wire or I snap the wire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or no is it wires, or is it snop? You know?
It turns out that it was snop.
Yes. It's not a word, but I'm going to go snop. Are you sure about that? The bomb will go off if you're wrong. No, I think I'm pretty sure. If only we had a dictionary with us. No, I'm pretty sure it's snop. Is that a word, though? I think I'm going to go with snop.
Well, you're the one who did the crossword really easily this morning.
No, I'm going to go with snop. But just before I write in the O, I do want to confess to you that I didn't do that crossword very quickly. Oh, my God, you bastard.
He writes in snop. It turns out to be correct.
The clue was it's Snope minus the E. I think it's Snob. Wait, that's not a word.
Snope minus the E. Snope isn't even a word.
But Snoop. That's... It's Snoop plus an E minus an O minus the E.
Yeah.
All right, so we got that. Then we got the Underwater Fighting Club.
Mm.
This is different to the next one. This is just a club where they fight underwater. So it's just a, you know, it's like Fight Club.
Mm. Mm.
But it's a bunch of guys who've, so it's an underwater fight club, right? Mm. So it's a bunch of guys who've read Chuck Palahniuk's book.
Fight Club.
Palindrome.
Palindrome's book. And he's and they're like, oh, we got to feel like men, like that. But then they also, another guy watches a whale documentary and he goes, actually, it's, I don't know, it's great being underwater.
Let's call this Beyond Palindrome.
Look, I don't know what that one is. I can't remember what that one was. Okay, then we got Dizzy Fighting Championships. Oh, wait, Underwater Fighting Club is all the animals. I'm sorry.
Yeah, all
fish.
Right.
Thank fish.
God. It's the fish fighting each other.
Yeah, crab yeah, exactly. V. Crab V.
Mako Shark.
Mako Shark.
Yeah.
Krill V. Blue Whale.
I think I got confused, as you guys can tell. Then we got Dizzy Fighting Club Championships. Dizzy Fighting Championships, that's just a... It's that's just, that's regular fighting fight club, but the octagon is spinning.
Yeah,
and
I guess when the bell gets rung for the end of a round or something, maybe they have to turn around, spin around on the spot until it's time to fight again.
Yeah,
and no spinning anti-clockwise to try and get your sense of balance back. No way. That's not allowed.
Absolutely.
I guess
you're spinning as well as the octagon is spinning.
Yeah, why not?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I would genuinely like to see that. I think there would be way more vomiting than in regular fighting sort of things.
Yeah,
sure.
That would actually kind of be exciting. People would sit up the front wearing those kind of like those sort of plastic ponchos and things like that, and hope to get some of this vomit on them.
Yeah,
like that. Mm-hmm. Like you could make it spin really fast. Like, I guess as the rounds go on, it starts spinning faster and faster to the point where they're sort of trapped near the wall. And you have to, that's why you got to train so hard, because you got to be able to sort of claw your way back to the other person.
Mm,
not too fast, or else you stick to the wall a la the rotor.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
That's why you got to be so strong.
Yeah, yeah. You got to train to fight centrifugal force.
Mm, yeah. Sure. I mean, there's actually two fights going on.
Really?
Yeah
you're right. Person and also you're underwater, person. So you're fighting
for air. And each round, you get deeper and deeper into water. And there's a whirlpool, which...
So I guess, Maelstrom.
Maelstrom. But then the centrifugal force would be making you go outwards, but then the whirlpool would be sucking you into the middle.
Oh, everything cancels out and it's really easy. It's just like
it's being actually really normal. Easy, and then you just fight until one, you know, before one drowns.
Mm.
But if you drown...
Well, I think both would drown.
Yeah. What about the ref?
He's in a lighthouse.
Oh, yeah.
John Wyndham is the ref.
The ref.
He's looking down the Dyson aquascope.
Sure. And when that fails, we could just have a dangling ref. Wouldn't that be cool? Sort of like a...
Wait a minute. When that fails, it's not going to fail.
Why would we have a contingency plan for something that's never going to happen?
What? You got your lighthouse, you got your Dyson Aquascope, you got John Wyndham.
Okay. When it succeeds too much, then maybe... Okay.
Maybe what I'm...
Negative thinking.
Maybe what I'm thinking about is when we bring this model to indoor soccer...
Sure, that's probably what you were thinking
for
about.
The linesmen, because they won't also be in the lighthouse, they can be dangling. They could be dangling near
someone
the line.
Someone can dangle.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just what I was thinking. Then we got the sneaky robot vacuum. This is the Chinese spies trying to ruin Australia's productivity through selective area cleaning with the robot vacuum.
Yeah, because how you can't get any work done if the room's messy, you know?
Yeah.
It's just that. It's just weaponizing that.
Yeah, that's never been a problem for me, but... But I imagine that in the world of the sketch, we could believe that. We could make that believable.
And going further, whoever's making those Chinese room cleaning robots would start to design them to look really attractive.
That's right.
That's like a honey trap kind of thing. Where Next thing you know,
you're in bed with the robot.
Robot vacuum cleaner.
Telling it all your secrets.
All your secrets. And it's recording it. And,
no.
Yeah. So if you are looking for a robot vacuum cleaner, yeah. I personally would advise, and I'm only advising myself because I'm the only one listening to this podcast, not to go for the attractive one. Sure. No matter how attractive it seems.
Oh, yeah.
Danger. Yeah.
Yeah, or get like one from the German companies or whatever.
We should have known it would be a honey trap because it was called Meal.
Yes.
Yeah, the gift was a dead giveaway.
Yes, callback.
I just like to.
All right, fuck you.
I like.
No, fuck you.
I like.
You were doing a callback to your previous callback joke, so you're not so smart now, are you? All right.
Yeah. It's become a real theme of this podcast that Andy yells a lot at me.
That's fine. That's good. It's good variation.
That's what I like as well. I like a bit of.
I don't know about the swearing, though. Just, is it normal to swear? When I invented podcasting, I didn't.
It was a clean.
Imagine it would be. It would go as far as swearing.
It was a Christian format when I invented it.
It's changed so much over time. But I guess you just invent something, you let it go its natural way. You know, you can't.
Thanks.
You can't control it.
Like the English language. That's how the Queen must feel about the English language.
Yes, yes, yes.
Then we got Davy Jones Foot Locker, which is a place, it's just the first store that opens up, which then kind of leads to a sort of a retail outlet brawl, which is a whole pirate community kind of starts to build in a pirate town. And it kind of becomes a really positive thing for the pirate community.
Sure.
And I guess it would work as an economy as long as everyone was stealing from each other equally.
Yeah. Or the ones who are stealing and doing really well are in some way benefiting all the other ones who don't. I think it's okay if some pirates get murdered and die and things like that at the expense of progress for the pirate community.
Interesting.
Then we got the bricklayer former glazier. And then obviously glazier.
What a classic
former,
sketch.
And then obviously glazier former bricklayer.
Wish there was a famous saying that started the lazier the glazier something something something. Oh, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
I think that's kind of one of those things that would be perfect for
glass is in the second bit.
Mm.
Lazy the glazier.
Off his ass.
Get off your get off your ass
and
the lazier the glazier, the more glass sits on its ass.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean that's
really good.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I don't really picture glass having an ass, but
I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Even though it's invisible.
The lazier the glazier.
Something about a pain or
just about this idea. Sorry, I know that
the pain in the glass,
the
maybe.
Pain.
It's got a rhyme though.
Pain in my lion mane. Have you ever thought about this? An invisible ass, like as a product.
Okay.
So it's just because, like I know it's not okay really to grab ass all the time, right? Both your own
all the time
or anyone else's, right?
Yeah.
But it's a thing that occasionally happens in your life, and it seems to be pleasant, if it's pleasant for both people, right? But if you made a product, right? But it's also not okay to be seen to be grabbing ass in public.
Yeah.
But if you invented a product that you could bring with you at all times, right? Even something you could strap to your leg, the side of your leg, right? That you could just grab, and it's the sensation of grabbing an ass, but it doesn't look like you're doing anything, right? It just looks
you're scrunching your hand.
Yeah, it just looks like you're opening and closing your hand, is a natural thing to do.
Yeah, you're only just scrunching your own ass.
Well, no. It's not, it doesn't make your own ass invisible. It's just a product.
Isn't that just what those stress balls are?
Yeah,
really?
but invisible and feels more like an ass. I'm going to write this down.
Alistair is unilaterally writing down his invisible grab ass idea.
Product. It's not a sketch, it's a product.
Yeah.
Right? And that's okay sometimes. You can write that down a variety of things. Sure. Before we go to the wrap up, which of these sketch ideas do you think ants would like? This is a question we ask occasionally on the podcast.
The Underwater Fight Club, I'd say.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, in their weight class, obviously, they do pretty well because they're able to lift so much more than their own
weight. Strength to weight ratio.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who would be?
And the and as an audience,
yes,
the figures would be unbelievable if that, if you could attract the ant community to to you know, for television, it would be the figures would be.
But also, if you could see it, I mean, I think there's then the risk of, you know, you've got the Mako shark in there battling against the ant. People, a lot of people are going to argue that you maybe you didn't have even bother booking an ant. You've just got a Mako shark there thrashing around. I don't even know. I don't reckon they even had an ant in there.
No, I'm not saying the ant fights.
Oh,
I thought it was the fighting is for the pleasure of the ants.
Oh, the ants watch.
The ants watch.
Sure.
The ants watch. Well, of course.
There are those.
Because it's underwater fight club. It's it's only sea creatures and man.
And man and Einstein.
And Einstein in an exoskeleton.
I forgot to write that down. I don't remember.
I'm saying harness the numbers of ants in the world and your ratings would be phenomenal. If you can attract the ant viewer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think ants also have thousands of eyes, don't they, on their little stalks.
I think that's incorrect. Totally incorrect.
No? They've only got two eyes?
Just two eyes, I think.
They don't have like multifaceted eyes like a like a melee fly or something?
I think you're thinking of melee creators.
Bees. Got it. Bees. I got it. That was a bit cryptic for my liking.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'll do the quick one next time.
Yeah. B-E-E's. I think you're thinking of B-E-E's.
Bees. Well, I know when you show a bee's point of view, you usually show it in a sort of a multi-hexagonal kind of image.
Are we thinking of a fly here?
Oh, fly too. Mm. But I'm pretty sure ants have just got the two eyes.
Mm. I wonder how different the movie The Fly would have been if it had been a bee instead of a fly.
The title would have really not made sense.
No, people would have been...
I guess they would have been like, oh, I guess it's referring to what the bee does, the fly, that it flies.
Yeah.
Well, there would have been the added jeopardy, as they like to say, in the fact that the bee has got a stinger, so it can sting you, whereas the fly, there's no sort of, apart from its extraordinary size, there's no risk of being stung or, you know, bitten.
But then there wouldn't have been as much, like, vomiting up on things. You know, I think that's kind of the beauty of the fly is its hideousness there.
Oh, see, I'm automatically thinking of the original Fly. You're thinking of the remake of the Fly with the vomiting.
I don't think I've seen
the original Fly. There's no vomiting.
No?
No, it's just head swap and body swap.
That's probably why they remade it. They're like, well, I know what's missing from this.
Yeah.
Vomiting. Now, we could do the same film but have them spinning around at a great speed. Or just make the fly vomit on stuff. Anyway... Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We really do appreciate it and you.
And
for
you.
It.
And we appreciate Michael for everything that he has done for this podcast and for podcasts.
Thank you very much, guys, for allowing me to ask myself onto the show.
We had been meaning to do it for a long, long time.
We have a sort of a career success cutoff where we get very uncomfortable about asking people onto the podcast. No offense to the people we've already asked onto the podcast, but you have had a long and very successful career as a sketch comedy writer, and I think it's a little intimidating.
Yeah.
For us to have you into our
thank you,
tank.
But the Emperor's new clothes have been exposed, surely, tonight. I'm just one of
Wardy
you.
Wardy is naked tonight. Yes, that is absolutely right. True.
How long have I known you fellows for, by the way? Alistair, I knew you before Andy, of course.
Yeah, so I think since about 2013 or 2014.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, so four or five years.
Yeah, wow, it was about 3 years into that friendship or, you know, awareness-ship that we... We started thinking about inviting you onto the podcast.
Yes.
It's taken, you know.
I nearly made it onto episode 36, 52, 95.
Yeah, we came very, very close. Very close.
Oh, and 108 was
108. The big
so
one we
close.
Said we'll
yeah.
do.
Yeah. Yeah.
108, don't be late.
Yes.
Ward is on the podcast.
Yep.
It'll be great,
yep.
mate, we said. Yeah, but then.
But 162, I'll become full circle and I'll always remember that. Mm. Number, as I always remember, the anagram of 11 plus 2 and 12 plus 1.
The important thing is that we've remembered everything that we've said so far in this episode. Where could people find you if they wanted to find you?
Well, you asked David M. Green that, and he had a website and everything, but I have no such website. That's no such promotion of myself.
Do you want to promote anything that you've ever produced?
No. I have written two books, one of which I saw in a secondhand bookstore the other day.
So you might be able to pick that up.
For $30.
What?
Whoa.
Because it was signed.
Oh.
It was a signed book, not to a particular person, but just when you do a book, sometimes you do a book signing and for bookshops and stuff. Anyway, it was a signed one, and it was by me, and it was $30.
Wow. I hope you bought it, because that sounds like
no, I didn't need it. I've already got my own copy signed.
Well, but is it signed? Yeah. Oh, it is. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a good get.
Signed it to myself.
You should start signing other books. Increase their value. You could sign them before you take them to the second-hand bookshop to sell them.
Yeah. No, I don't. I have no website. I have nothing coming out to promote.
That is quite funny that you see your signed book in a second-hand bookshop for $30. You're like, I've got heaps of those at home, and you bring them all into the shop.
I've got two.
What do you want for these? $20 each? Or?
Yeah. Well, it was never even sold for $30. I think it was retailed for $19.95 originally. So.
Anyway, we haven't heard what the books are called. Or
the book is called, overseas listeners, you can get it on Amazon, I think.
Yeah, great.
It's called Zombie McCrombie from an Overturned Combi.
It's a very funny parody of the very popular Harry McCleary books.
Yeah, so it's a kind of a kid's book with a sort of a zombie twist. Pretty dark and illustrated by a very talented illustrator called Gypsy Taylor.
Looks so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise just plugging away.
What's your other book out of interest?
It was from 2013 or 12, the Talking About Your Generation Book of Everything Ever.
Ah.
Yeah, which you would really like.
Yeah, I
think.
Should check that out. I wonder if
it's
still...
A parody quiz book. Proper quiz questions for various generations, X, Y, and Z, but lots of little comedy bits and bobs in there.
Oh, I did not know that existed. That's cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's still for sale somewhere.
I'm not sure. It could be.
Are they doing a reprint soon, do you think?
No. No. By the way, my name is nowhere on it. It's a tie-in with a TV show hosted by Sean McCaleb from back then, and obviously to sell it, who am I? So Sean's face is on the cover. And,
sure.
But I did it all myself. But there's no buy Michael Ward or anything. So there was no reading or promotional trail or signing of it or anything. Because but it was just recycled old questions from the show and said so in the book.
Magnificent.
Yeah.
Well, pick those both up, please. Get straight onto Amazon and find a. If there's a signed copy by Sean?
I didn't sign any copies of the first book.
Sure. Mm. But maybe Sean did because his face is.
No, I wouldn't allow him to.
All right.
Good.
Well, you can find us at Two and Tank, and I'm at Alistair TB.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
And you can donate to the Patreon if you want to do that. That's always
We'd
lovely.
We love that
Patreon,
so much.
Patreon.com.
What is this Patreon business?
Patreon is like it's a website on the internet where.
Slow down. Website?
No, it's like a mind shop.
Mm. A mind shop, yes.
On the Sky Sea.
Sky, yes.
Where you can go on, you can support people who create various different projects, and you become make a monthly donation, and it gives you access to additional rewards and that sort of thing. So people who make a donation can give us the three words that we then use.
Oh,
to do a sketch.
I see.
But also, if you donate a little bit more, you can get bonus episodes. We do two bonus episodes a month, which, by the way, I'm late on uploading the most recent one, so I've got to do that today.
Patreon, is that anything to do with Patreon? Is it Spanish for Patreon or something?
I think it's a little little play on it, a little twist.
Oh, okay.
They put an E in there. Mm. Which was, they probably got it off the end of Snope.
Yep.
Well, you should cut this bit out and only reveal what Patreon means to the people
who pay a certain amount. Yeah, if you want to know what we're talking about, give us $50 a week.
Yeah.
That would be so nice.
Yeah. We love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.